listening to CFAC 960 AM, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Owned and operated by Rogers Media. Also streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Kerr Steinberg, The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's always been a passing league, and it's always been a quarterback league. But, you know, what those guys are asked to do on the fly now in terms of reading the coverage and making decisions, you know, in mid-play, they have to be mobile. They have to be able to throw the ball. They have to do a whole lot of things. And you can't, you know, you can drop a young guy in with a lot of talent, but I don't know you're going to see a lot of young quarterbacks come in and just light up the league earlier in their careers, because it's become a more complex position. You know, it really has. You know, and you know, I think in the past there were guys who came in and, you know, as rookies had great CFL seasons, you know. But I think that's a lot to ask. And I think, you know, with the kid playing for Montreal tonight, you know, you see he's a big talent. And his Canadianness is a, you know, it's a bit of a fluke that they wound up with a Canadian quarterback. But wouldn't it be great if, you know, we had another, you know, an excellent, you know, legitimate Canadian starting quarterback? It's been a while. But, you know, he looked over his head last week. And I assume he'll be still over his head, and he'll have to limit the offense, you know, which means it makes it easier for the defense. And you know, he's going in against a good team in any case. I'm not saying we're about to enter into another golden age of quarterbacks, but we had a bunch of guys in the league. We have a bunch of guys in the league right now who I think have a lot of promise. Problem is, you know, five of them or four of them or five of them or six of them, whatever the number is, are out right now, and their replacements are not going to be up to it.
Stephen Brent this morning with Peter Labardius and Ryan Pinder. Pat, Drew Willey gets hurt yesterday. Now, if you carry over Ricky Ray's injury from last year, he's not ready to go. There are six quarterbacks, albeit five of them are probably legitimate starters. I'm, you know, two are injured in Montreal, so you can make a case there. But five games into the season and six quarterbacks are down. There's new rules in the league, and that's certainly impacting play, but it has nothing to do with protecting the quarterback. You know my love of jumping to conclusions real early in the season. But if you look at last year, didn't everybody, Bo Levi Mitchell missed a game? I think everybody got hurt, right?
Yep.
At some point. Now, it's a physical sport. It's a contact sport. It happens. But it seems lately it's been happening a lot in the CFL. And it's not the same league it was in the 90s where you had a stable of quarterbacks with Dave Dickinson backing up Doug Flutie and Henry Burris, the third stringer, and Jeff Garcia, whoever was in that mix. Or yeah, even Edmonton at one point had Matt Dunnigan, Damon Allen. That's not the CFL anymore. And let's be perfectly honest, it's going to hurt the quality of the games early on. And that's never good for a league that's not 82 games a year. It's 18. You can't afford to lose people in July because of no good quarterbacks. We were weeks away from teams having to play the Wildcat because we've run out of quarterbacks.
Yeah, it might be a little extreme.
Okay, so that was a little extreme.
Although talking to Arash an hour ago, I mean, he thinks there's going to be a lot of gimmicks and a lot of different-looking gadget plays tonight for Montreal.
Really?
Brandon Bridge potentially getting the start. We think it's going to be Bridge, but they still haven't officially told us who's going to be starting. It's bad for the CFL. We've played five games, and if you count Ray, there's more quarterbacks hurt than there are games played in the CFL this year. And if we're not counting Ray, it's 5-5. Crompton's gone down. Willie's gone down.
Yeah.
We've seen, obviously,
we've lost
Riley
one for
Durant
an entire year, right?
Down. Durant's done for the year.
Yeah.
It is not good the way things are trending right now and now Willie goes down. And Willie went down, and that was scary. Like, he looked like he was in bad shape. He got hit. I still don't understand how that's not a penalized play. Like, it was a blatant helmet-on-helmet hit, and that is so egregiously missed by the officiating crew. Like, that should have been 15 yards at the very, very least. If not, probably should have been 15 yards. It's amazing it didn't get called, but again, it's just, I don't know if there's anything that explains it. Like, I think this is just a really bad rash of injuries. Yeah.
Right.
I think it's just bad luck all kind of coming together at the same time, but it's not good for the league. And certainly the lack of quarterback depth in this league. I mean, last year, Brendan Tamman in Saskatchewan got raked over the coals because he did not have good quarterback depth behind Darian Durant. He's one of the few guys who truly addressed it this offseason by going out and getting Kevin Glenn to help them out. Glenn, at the very least, is a commodity that they can count on to win some regular season
football.
He can
get you to the playoffs.
They're not winning the Grey Cup. I'm fairly confident of that with Glenn at quarterback.
Agreed.
But at the very least, he's a tide stemmer. So you know that he can, at the very least, win some football games. But there's not a lot of good quarterback depth in this league, and I think that's going to be addressed more and more and more and more over the next year or two because of situations that we've seen the last couple
of years.
Okay,
so that's an interesting point to me. So as the author of Monday Morning Quarterback and 3-Minute Warning?
Yes, those are the two.
No, what? Drill.
It's 3-Minute Warning. You called it drill yesterday. It's 3-Minute Warning. So it was just
the same as the wrestling group? Eric Bischoff's bad guys?
They were the 3-Minute
Warning?
They were the 3-Minute Warning, yeah.
That's not where it came from. No, see, that's a salute to an homage to, you know, a decade past in wrestling. Anyway, doesn't matter. You write for the CFL.
I also write the New World Order. I write.
Do you do too? Okay. But that's just about soap operas, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So riddle me this, Batman. You're talking about quarterback development. Is that not a red herring? Is that not isn't it like chasing a unicorn a little bit? I mean, it's a nice idea in theory, but have we not been, and I mentioned before, like the 90s, you really seem to have stables of quarterbacks. We talked yesterday about this, you know, windfall that the Flames have with Drew Tate. That's one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is quarterback development, is that attainable? Is that achievable? Or is that just something we talk about when we get into crunch time?
I think it is because the Stampeders have, like, I can't imagine that it's a fluke that the Stampeders always have a dearth of good quarterbacks. Mm. Like, we're going back to Flutie, Garcia, yeah. Dickinson, and then, you know, Henry Burris is in the fold, and now it's Henry Burris and Drew Tate and Bo Levi Mitchell, and then Kevin Glenn's there, and the Stampeders can't be a fluke that they always have these good quarterbacks and they always have depth at quarterback. So I feel like it is attainable because I feel like at least one team has always been able to do it. And so because of that, I feel like it's more negligence than some of the other teams by not doing by not being able to keep up with the Joneses in that respect.
Well, and I wonder if it isn't so much, you know, I think we all recognize that the Calgary Stampeders are one of the best, if not the best team in terms of talent development and talent scouting and
that's
all.
Period. At not least, just at the right. position.
But what you're talking about essentially is, or what I think you're talking about is essentially this notion of 18 quarterbacks in the league that could play. You know, 9 of them would be better and 4 of them would be better than the other 5, but you know what I'm saying. And I don't know if that's attainable. You know, the shift in the United States over the past decade to, you know, a different, more of a passing game, mm-hmm. I think has robbed the CFL of potential bodies. Guys that are, you know, normally would have come north are getting a little bit of a longer look and hanging around. I think that impacts it too.
I think that's probably a fair comment. But I also just feel like... I think that there's been some negligence. Like for Brendan Tamman to believe that Tino Sunseri was a legitimate backup quarterback and a guy that you could feel comfortable with playing games last year, like that's just bad talent evaluation. Like there were better guys out there. Like for the other team that's done a pretty decent job of it, for mm-hmm. all that we make fun of their other roster foibles, the Toronto Argonauts have done a pretty good job of developing
Barker's pretty good
right?
at that. Yeah.
And I don't think there's any coincidence that Barker was with the Stampeders when they were
agree.
And Huffnagel obviously and Murphy are very good at it too now.
Yeah.
But Barker in Toronto is a very, very good player personnel guy. And Zach Collaros was there. And now Trevor Harris is there. And they've been able to develop quarterbacks fairly nicely over the last number of years too. So there have been teams who have been able to do it, but I think there's some negligence. I think Hamilton, for the longest time, was kind of just wandering in the wilderness. I think Winnipeg.
I agree with that.
Saskatchewan, I think, deserves some criticism for their lack of it last year.
But let me build a case for where I'm going on this. You pay far closer attention than I do to the United States, to the NFL. I watch, and I know, but you pay closer attention to it. Is this not a similar conversation that teams down there are having? I mean, you're a Bucs fan.
Mm-hmm.
You just drafted a quarterback. Mm-hmm. How many really good quarterbacks do the Buccaneers have?
Like right now?
Yes.
So potentially 0?
Right. And how many other teams around the NFL could be in that same situation?
A lot.
Five or six?
There's a few.
Ten? So is there enough quarterbacks to go around in the NFL? If there's not enough quarter, you know, to give you depth, what we're talking about, they have a much bigger roster, but just the thought of having two capable quarterbacks. What happened to Arizona last year? How many quarterbacks did Arizona go through?
They went through what?
Four?
Four? Once Carson Palmer went down.
I mean, there's bodies. I don't argue there's bodies, Pat, but I just wonder if, you know, in the NFL, if it's not a similar problem to the CFL, if that position is becoming very difficult to find guys.
Well, again, though, there's a team or two that is always able to do it.
Right. Absolutely.
Like New England went from Drew Bledsoe to Tom Brady. And when
you
Tom
don't
Brady
lose your
down,
position with an injury. That never happens.
Never happens. And then Tom Brady misses most of a season, and Matt Cassel comes in, and Matt Cassel does the job for him. They don't make the playoffs. I think they went 12-4 and missed the playoffs that year.
Yeah, exactly.
11-5 or whatever it was. Cassel got the job done. So,
but there's a question for you. Did Cassel
do it in the NFL?
Yeah, but when Cassel leaves, though, you know, back to your point about the teams, I think you're right. I think absolutely there's some teams, but does that then become system? Does that then become the coaching? Does that become the play calling that, you know, because Matt Cassel
did not have the same success elsewhere.
He parlayed it into an opportunity, right?
But Kansas City didn't work out, and it really hasn't worked out since then. That's accurate.
You know, so let me drift back to the CFL and ask you where I was really going with all of this, because we could bog down in the development, and I respect where you're coming from. I'm just asking that question. Are there enough quarterbacks out there? The thing that I wonder about is we've just instituted all of these new rules, right? We've had 153 flags thrown in five games. That's an average of 30 flags a game. None of the new rules, I should say, I'm not saying none of those flags, none of the new rules have anything to do with protecting a quarterback, right? Do we seriously have to think about putting new rules in to protect a quarterback? Now, you know, and I know football's done that in the last decade, right? They've done a lot of things about where you're allowed to hit a quarterback, how you're allowed, when you're allowed, in the grasp, all of those things. Do we need to look at more of that? Is that a reaction that a league would go to when they can't develop enough quarterbacks? Do they say, okay, we got to do something radical to protect the quarterbacks? We're doing something radical with kicking. Difference. That has no safety value. It's just more the merit of the action. But is that something that the CFL looks at?
Well, I'm trying to think of the quarterbacks who have gone down. I mean, Durant was an Achilles.
Did he get hit?
Exactly. No, and Mike Riley is a knee injury, but Riley plays a style that is so difficult to really protect him. And the only one that I really feel that you could have protected a quarterback on is last night. I mean, Drew Willey's hit, the hit on Drew Willey was a blatantly bad hit.
Right, I'm not calling for more rules. But I just wonder if...
I'm just trying... Like, I don't know if there's a whole lot more you could do.
But sometimes there's an institutional knee-jerk, right?
Yep.
We're going through... Well, you look at the last couple of years, boy, quarterbacks, they've taken... Maybe we got to do something here. And I wonder if rather... Because, you know, let's accept the premise that you're right. You just have to work harder and develop better. And you'll have options. So look, it's a contact sport. Guys are going to get hurt. We know that. You can't... What, are we going to play flag football? We've been down that path. I just wonder where it goes.
I feel sometimes, and I feel like it's maybe more of a conversation in the NFL because there are four times more teams and there's so many players. So in the NFL, I think it's a really, really valid conversation. In the CFL, I still think it's valid, but in the CFL, I still think a lot of it is laziness and bad player personnel because there's only nine teams.
Yep.
You should be able to find two quarterbacks that you can at the very least... Like, the fact that Edmonton has got Nichols and Riley, like Nichols is not a great quarterback.
No,
he's not.
He's Kevin Glenn Light.
Exactly. You can put him in there. He can win games for you.
Yeah.
He can manage a football game and the team can help him out around him. So the Eskimos can do it. The Stampeders can do it. The Argos can do it. So why can't the other teams? Like, I feel like there's a lot of laziness and negligence and poor player personnel decisions that are made by CFL teams. In a nine-team league, I don't feel it's acceptable to have poor quarterback depth. In a 32-team league with a hard salary cap and all of what goes into the NFL. I know there's a salary cap in the CFL too, but it's a different financial reality
in
the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the NFL, it's a whole lot more difficult to be able to find that. And it's far more of a...
Well, I wonder if that's maybe
fluke, right?
I wonder if that's maybe part of it too, though. Well, as I said before, maybe you don't get the same caliber of athlete because of the practice rosters and because of the volume now of teams down there. You know, let's be honest here. As much as we love this game, and we do, hard to take a kid out of Mississippi and go, well, you know, you're making this on the practice roster. You can make a little bit less than that.
You have to work harder, though. Like, and so
yeah, but you don't grow up aspiring to play in the CFL.
Like, what? Of course not.
Yeah,
but I'm not saying you got to work harder to convince these guys to come here.
Oh no, oh, I'm sorry. You're not like, talking about the athlete has to work harder.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
more like where did a lot of like let's go take a look at Trevor Harris first of all. Trevor Harris, he goes to Edinburgh College. Okay, so
in Scotland.
Well, let's find out where Edinburgh College is.
No,
it's,
I know.
In Edinburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I'm not even sure if it's an NCAA school.
Right.
It is an NCAA Div 2
okay.
Football team.
So we might see them week one when a powerhouse brings in somebody to wipe up.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So I don't even they're not even Div 1AA. They're Div 2. So they're below.
So they don't even get that opportunity to have their doors blown off.
There's the FBC, right. Then the FSC. So, or FBF. Anyway, there is the first tier, the 1AA, and then the Division 2. So that's where Trevor Harris went. So you have to go find these guys in different spots. No, you're not going to be able to convince Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota to come and play in the CFL. Oh. You've got to go and say, okay, Trevor Harris, or I'm going to take a look at Zach Caleros and where he went. Zach Caleros went to, it's a little bit better, University of Cincinnati. At least it's a Div 1 school. But still, you're taking guys who aren't necessarily on the beaten path.
I get
you. And you sometimes have to go undrafted players, right?
I hear
you've got to work. But there are athletes out there. There are so many football players on this continent that you can find athletes, you can find guys who fit the CFL game, you can find 18 quarterbacks. It's just some teams do it poorly and some teams do it well.
I'll accept that, Your Honor, as evidence. But I point back to my theory before. I wonder if, if the CFL doesn't go, well, we got to protect the quarterback. So now we're going to put rules into it. And I accept what you're saying, Pat. Mm-hmm. And I really, it's a wonderful program. Is that around? Have you seen that Around the Table, I think they call it, where Rod Smith sits down
absolutely.
That's fantastic, by the way. Fantastic. I'd love to hear that as a topic. I would love to hear a Huffnagel, a Barker, an Ed Hervey or whoever, some general managers, some player personnel guys, just talk about exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, my God, sixth or down, Pat. What happens over the weekend? The odds are we're going to lose one more.
Yeah, well, right? The way it's going right now, it's only going to be backups come week three. Like, Bo Levi's, knock on wood. I won't say that. It's going right now,
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. We'll take a break. We'll switch back to hockey. It's been a busy afternoon. And looky here. Ryan O'Reilly. Did he reset the landscape for contracts in the National Hockey League? That might be me jumping the gun a bit, but the Buffalo Sabres tying him up to a very unique deal. It'll be very curious to see what the fallout is. I'm going to dive into that with Pat next. Brandon Saad's got himself a new deal. The craziness that we saw on Thursday or Wednesday, or the craziness we thought we might see on Wednesday, we didn't. Maybe we saw it a bit today. Some big money, some big term thrown around. Get into that. Arash Madani, more on what we've been talking about, the CFL, coming up at the top of the hour. Later on, our Josh Humphries is down at the rodeo. He'll join us with coverage of what's going
on. The rodeo that's on Sportsnet 1.
Yes, apparently. It is. We had Connor McDavid on Sportsnet earlier today, too, if you wanted to watch live practices of prospect camp.
Prospect camp practices. Yeah. Are they doing Flames prospect camp?
No, they won't be. No, certainly not. 4,000 plus people in attendance for that thing.
Give them credit.
We make fun of them too, but they show up.
Holy cow, they love that team.
And there's eyeballs and there's people watching it. And the other thing is, apparently, we own a balloon. Nobody told me we own a balloon.
This ought to be good.
I wanted an RV. I've been barking up the wrong tree. We are live in studio today, but on Monday, Pat, we're going to be at Triple B.
Yes, we are.
And that's barbecue,
beer,
and bulls.
Bull riding.
Right.
Bulls, yeah.
And it's a great place to bring the family. It's shaded. There's two bulls there. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
DJ
great barbecue
going on.
Yeah.
It's like a great place. Like, I always feel like it's a great place to go during the day, like when we'll be there on Kids Day. Kids Day is usually the Tuesday or the Wednesday. You know better than I, though. But so the Kids Day, like if you're a parent and you're like, holy cow, yeah, the cotton candy, I'm carrying like two prizes. Yeah, we'll go on the friggin' tilt-a-whirl again, but can we please just go sit down for 10 minutes? So you go into Triple B,
right.
Get the shade, have yourself a water if you want a beer, if you want a Coke, like whatever.
Right.
You sit down, relax for just a little bit, and then you can go back out and go back on the grounds. And then the best part about it, and you and I saw this firsthand last year, rodeo lets out, what, about 4:34?
Yeah.
It gets jammed in there because it's right beside the grandstand. So out everybody comes from the rodeo, right into Triple B's. Music gets turned up. All of a sudden, it's an outdoor nightclub. It's an awesome spot, and it was a really good addition to the grounds last year.
Noisy?
I liked it. It's a generation
gap, know me.
Right?
Kids, get off my lawn. I'm trying to do rodeo.
Give me 10 years from now, a decade from now, I'll probably be in your
place. It's too much. I have to put newspapers in my ears. We'll come back and talk a little hockey.
I was like, I'm so fancy. Yeah. It's like, yeah, turn it up.
Yeah. I'm having one of those days, Pat, where I could really use a more mature coworker because it's tough for me to discuss with you the problems I'm having with my oldest today. We'll discuss the problem.
No.
There's a lot of gray hair on this side. We'll come back and talk some hockey. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sports is really important to you. It's all we do all the time. Proud to serve the best fans in Canada. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. On the NHL beat. It's the big show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
That the teams that have money to spend or specific targets go out and get them early, and then they hang back and, you know, try to wait out, you know, some of the guys left behind and then get some bargains as time goes on here. But I imagine it's a stressful time for a number of players out there who remain unsigned, you know, heading into the July 4th weekend south of the border. I don't expect we'll have a lot going on for most of the league this weekend. And, you know, some of these guys now are going to have to wait to find out what the future holds in the NHL.
Chris Johnson from Sportsnet on this morning with the guys. And he's right. I mean, things have slowed down, Pat, in terms of signings. John Ramage found a new home, though, 1-year deal with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
It didn't take him long at all, actually.
No. But two significant deals signed with players acquired. So these are two players that had their rights, they were traded. Brandon Saad, acquired by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Let's start there. A 6-year contract worth $6 million per year. If he was a free agent, that would make him the highest paid free agent we've seen this year. He is not.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he's a restricted free agent. But yeah, if he was on
but
the
But if he was
market,
a UFA,
which
probably speaks to how, you know, calm the UFA market was. I turn it over to you because I do appreciate how you look at these things financially. What do you make of this deal? Because it seems to me that it's probably a little more than you want to spend.
It was slightly high for me.
But it's the market, right? In the sense that they went out and got him.
Potential offer
sheets and things like that. He now becomes, I believe, behind Bobrovsky. Does he not become the highest paid Columbus Blue Jacket?
Yes. Highest paid skater, highest paid forward, second highest paid player on the team.
Right.
When I saw this contract, I immediately thought that Stan Bowman made the right move in trading him. And, you know, is it a horrible contract? No, it's not a great contract. It's not good value. It's a big contract, but Columbus can do it and they can make it work and it works with their structure, but Chicago couldn't. And there's no way Chicago could pay him this much.
No.
Chicago needs to be very, very smart and prudent and measured with their contracts. So there's no way they could give Saad this money. And for them to bring back Anisimov, who's $2.5 million less than what Saad's making now, and to bring back a real good prospect in Marco Dano, I think Chicago actually made a really darn good move here in trading Saad. I like him. Career year, great playoffs, 22 years old. I think there's a lot there, but you can't be given money like that to Brandon Saad if you're in the situation the Hawks are.
This one makes a little more sense than the one we're going to talk about. This makes far more sense than, say, the Bobby Holik deal, but isn't quite the same as the Michael Backlund deal. I'm not sure those are the exact parameters everybody uses around the league, but I look at Backlund as being a really, really good value, mm-hmm. almost to the point where I feel a little bit for the athlete. Maybe could have got a little bit more. And, of course, we all remember Bobby Holik, who the Rangers just, right? We got to get him. We'll empty the bank. Here it is. Look, 22 years old, as you said, joins a talented group of young forwards. I don't think he's an anchor, Pat. I don't think he weighs you down. But I do wonder if he's – we're about to find out, aren't we, if he's going to be able to carry the load of a number one or a first-line player, because I think that's the responsibility he's going to get in Columbus. Now, can you help me out with this? Are you familiar with this Heroes chart? Have you seen this?
I've seen it. I haven't quite deciphered what it means.
So it's an analytic representation of what the player is in different situations, yeah, in terms of scoring. And then the graph works at fourth liner, third liner, second, yeah, liner. So it's kind of works east to west. And, you know, he pokes in the case of this, pokes into first liner in a couple of things. And, you know, his goals for it, his goals against are pretty good. So analytically, he's a pretty good hockey player, right?
And he's 22. There's a lot, yeah, there. And I mean, he's playing on a really good team.
Yeah.
But what I'm, like, for me, Saad's still a guy that I think, you know, he's played on this really good team. He's played a lot with Taves.
Mm.
Okay, so what are you away from that? And luckily, I mean, he's probably going to see
protected,
a lot of time.
That's where we use that word protected,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, potentially protected. You don't really know until you leave. I mean, guys like Taves, you know, because
right,
we know that Taves drives things.
Right.
But Saad goes to Columbus and likely plays on Ryan Johansson's flank. I mean, that's probably a fairly good bet to see him play on a side with him. So you have that, and Johansson's a pretty good center. So I'm curious as to Johansson's not Taves, Johansson's not of that elite level, and the Jackets aren't the Blackhawks. What is Saad? Is he a guy who can continue to put up more points? Like,
yeah,
52 points is a career year at 22. So can he get to 60 next year? Can he, in a even more enhanced role and with more weight on his shoulders, be even more of a producer? These are the things that I don't know yet. And that's why, to me, because I don't know those things, because they haven't been proven, it would be tough for me to give him the contract that they gave him. But I understand where Columbus is. They missed the playoffs last year after a really disappointing year. Mm-hmm. They'd like to bounce back. They feel like they're on the cusp of something special, so you have to pay. And the term for a 22-year-old, I'm okay with 6 years.
Yeah.
$6 million's a lot for a guy who hasn't even scored 60
hasn't,
points in this
well, he hasn't put up 30 goals yet.
Nope.
And I wonder a little bit, and it'll probably come out a little bit more in the conversation we're about to have, if this is one of those deals that GMs and 6-7 years are going to point to and go, well, this is the justification, the reason why we need to shut the league down and fix the CBA. All right, so that's one deal.
And the one just before we move on from that deal,
yep,
somebody made a really good point on the text line earlier,
yep,
about compare Saad's contract to Brendan Gallagher's contract. Gallagher's in the 3.7 range, I believe,
right,
and Saad's at 6. Their career point totals, their last season point totals, like they're almost identical.
Yeah.
And Gallagher's a bargain right now if you compare it to Saad.
Sorry, what's he at?
Gallagher's, I believe, let me just go pull up for sure. I believe it's 3.7, though, I believe is what Gallagher's at.
Okay.
And he just signed his extension last year. Gallagher, 3.75, and Saad, 6. So there's $2.25 million in difference for basically the exact same point totals, basically the exact same age. And
that's an interesting comparable.
It's like, whoa. And yeah, that's what winning 2 Stanley Cups will do for you.
Exactly.
And, like you win multiple cups, all of a sudden you get that boost.
That, and I think that kind of that heightened offer sheet threat fast forwards everything, and the team that gets them and needs to sign them and wants to sign them, you know, if you're the agent, you're probably not working that hard on that, right? I don't think you worked that hard on it. Now, an agent that did work hard on it appears to be Pat Morris, who I believe represents Ryan O'Reilly. A new 7-year contract that will make him a very handsomely compensated man.
Especially in lump sums.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, let's deal with the 7 years, Pat, because is that the maximum he could get from Buffalo, or could he?
He could have gotten 8.
He could have gotten, yep, 8. Okay. So because they traded for his
because
rights, right?
Because he's their player, he can go 8.
If he was a free agent, he could only go 7. Okay,
seven, yeah.
So there could have been one more year in there.
Yeah.
You want to explain this?
Well, here's how I understand it, and add to it if you will.
And Joe Yearden's going to join us at 3:30 from NHL.com, and he covers the Sabres,
yeah,
so he'll be able to fill in some of these blanks, too.
So, you've had a little bit more time to actually read all the,
yeah,
final points. I was on the air while it was happening.
Yeah.
So as I understand it, The 7-year contract is heavily weighted with signing bonuses, and his actual salary itself on a $52.5 million contract, the only actual salary on that $52.5 million is $7
million. Million a year.
$1 million a year. The rest of that $45.5 million is broken up into signing bonuses, which start at $10 million and gradually get lower over the 7 years. So every year he's getting a huge signing bonus and paid to him as a lump sum, and then his actual checks are only getting cut to him on a $1 million annual salary.
This is where I tweeted it out, and I wonder aloud if they have not just upset the apple cart. Here's the advantages. One, you only pay escrow on the $1 million. You don't pay escrow, apparently, on the bonus money.
So, which is, you know, significant. So, you're paying...
For instance, Brandon Saad, who's going to get $6 million a year, is paying escrow on $6 million a year.
Yeah.
And even though...
So it's a percentage thing.
Right.
So if you're...
I think it's about
15? If it's 15% on your escrow,
yeah.
So you're getting 15% of that every year and every paycheck...
Withheld.
Is going into an escrow fund that's withheld, and you can get it back depending on revenues, but it is withheld throughout the season. So 15% of $6 million and the checks that are being cut to you on a $6 million salary as opposed to 15% of $1 million is massive. So that is one thing, is that, that's the apparent, is that you're not paying the escrow.
Very interesting. It's very interesting. The other part to it, and I'm sure there's more, but the other one that's come up that is really interesting, which actually protects the team in this case.
Helps the team out.
That any potential buyout is only on the $1 million salary. So if all of a sudden he goes flat tomorrow, you know, they keep him for 1 year and they get rid of him, they buy him out next year, Pat, they're buying out $6 million of contract, not $43 or $45 million of contract. I think this is significant. I think if you're Mark Giordano, if you're looking at something, wouldn't you want protection from escrow? Especially if you're going to get, you know, asked for what you're asking for. I ran this by you before. We both are on the same page here. The fact that the Buffalo Sabres have announced this, the fact that it's public, leads us to believe that it's gone through the vetting process in the NHL. Because I was trying to remember what happened with the rejected contracts.
So Kovalchuk's contract got announced. Now, I believe it was like, hey, Devils have signed Kovalchuk. And then the NHL said, whoa, wait a second.
That's the timing I was trying to remember.
I believe it was announced.
So they went. So it's still possible that if this is some sort of egregious, in the eyes of the NHL, if this is a
circumvention, they can probably reverse it and penalize Buffalo.
It feels like a circumvention in a way to me. Of all the players signing contracts here in the last little while, and look, credit to Pat Morris, credit to Tim Murray. If this is what they've come up with, and this is, you've got to ask yourself, why didn't you think of it first? But, you know, we were talking before. There are some, and Jeff Merrick's one of them, and I respect Jeff Merrick, and he points to the Mika Kiprusoff contract in the last CBA with the $1 million at the end that kind of started that backdiving. Yeah. And they, you know, that last battle we had, no hockey for half a year, and part of that battle was getting rid of those backdiving contracts. So I hate to be that guy, but if this is what I think it could be, you know, here's the ammunition for the next lockout.
Well, and Kovalchuk's deal was the one that made them cut the max to 8 years. So you couldn't sign these ridiculously long contracts to get the cap hit down.
Right.
Because that was another way that teams were kind of loopholing their way into helping their cap. Okay, well, we want this player. Let's sign him to 15 years as opposed to six, because that'll lower the cap hit substantially. And then he can retire or whatever. And the NHL said, whoa, wait a second. We're not stupid. So I wonder how the NHL looks at this. Like, I don't think the NHL cares about escrow, but I wonder if the NHL...
The NHL may not.
The NHLPA certainly cares about escrow. But the NHL probably looks at it and says, well, wait a second. Buffalo's really helping themselves here with a potential buyout.
Yeah.
I don't know if we necessarily like this, because it would be tough to...
It seems to me that it's precedent setting.
But this one, like, it would be tough for them to say, no, you're circumventing, because what are they doing wrong necessarily? Like, all they're doing is they got a player to agree to
this. This would fall into that catch-all, right? In your contract, my contract, we always have that thing at the bottom, right? other duties as required. Okay, so if all of a sudden the basement floods here, Kirsch can come in and go, well, according to your contract, you get to pump out the basement this weekend. Yeah. Other duties is required. I think it comes back to that language, and I'm no lawyer, but it's the spirit of the agreement.
Which there is kind of a clause in there for.
Right. Like
if you've read the CBA and haven't then wanted to cut your eyes out with razor blades, then you will see there is that clause about circumvention and good faith and all of that.
Yeah.
This one to me, because the Kovalchuk deal, which got penalized, was so blatant. And didn't the Luongo one end up getting scrutinized?
I want to say wasn't there a Pronger deal too?
That where they were all scrutinized.
Right. They were all scrutinized.
Kovalchuk was the one that got massive penalties.
That got the penalties, but yeah. I believe the other two were rejected, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
The Luongo, wasn't there a Luongo contract that was rejected?
Yeah, and they had to redo it.
And they had to redo it, yeah.
But with Kovalchuk, it was so blatant. It's like, Kovalchuk's not playing when he's 43 years old. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
We're not stupid. Whereas this one, okay, it's very clear that it's helpful to the Sabres and it's helpful to the player, but they're not really doing anything untoward. They're not really doing anything shady. Like, at least in my eyes, like, what are they doing wrong? Whereas the Kovalchuk one, they were clearly like, oh, we just don't want to pay him so we can get the cap hit down. This is like, okay, player agreed to it. We agree to it. Yeah, it helps us. Yeah, it helps him. What's the problem?
But it's being pointed out that it's apparently not that different. And I don't know this, and I don't remember this being an issue when David Clarkson signed. When he signed with Toronto, apparently this contract isn't that different than the David Clarkson contract. I just don't remember this debate about it. I just don't remember this kind of these eyes wide open. And that's why I say I think it's a big deal. Maybe it's not a big deal at all. But if I'm a player and I'm about to sign a deal, boy, that, you know, I'll take the $1 million salary. You give me the signing bonuses and I don't have to pay escrow. And God love it, if it doesn't work out, you know, you make out like a bandit too.
Yeah.
It seems weird to me. And maybe it's all about nothing. Although Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnson,
a lot of people are tweeting about it. Absolutely.
Yeah, everybody's kind of talking about it. So sometimes where there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire, right?
I mean, for O'Reilly.
And now this is the other thing I want to ask you about. This is a Jay Feaster legacy, isn't it?
O'Reilly?
Yeah. O'Reilly wasn't going to go backwards in salary.
No,
Buffalo, right?
You go and I'll go pull up the contract progression for O'Reilly since the offer sheet that he was signed to.
Right.
So O'Reilly plays for the Buffalo Sabres.
Mm.
So O'Reilly's contracts have gone like this. Since his entry-level deal, his entry-level deal came to an end of the 2011-2012 season. So the 2012-13 season was the lockout year.
Right.
He was signed to that offer sheet in, what, January?
No, it was February.
Was it February? Yeah, okay, so about a month into the season, February of 2013. And that offer sheet had his salary go from 3.5 in the first year to 6.5 in the second year.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened, and then his new deal, so that had an average annual value of $5 million.
Right.
So that was the offer sheet contract, bumped up to an average annual value of $6 million for his last two-year contract that he signed with Colorado.
So, and Calgary had nothing to do with that.
The only thing they had something to do with was that it escalated so quickly, right?
And so they kind of set the mar because you weren't going back.
Exactly.
You can't go back.
Like, he's not going to be like, well, I was really good for you. You can't, like, you got to pay me a little bit more. So Calgary bumped him from entry level to $5 million, and then Colorado bumped him from 5 to 6, and now this goes from 6 to 7.5 as an average annual value. So the O'Reilly numbers have just continued to plummet. He's been one of the more rapidly rising guys.
Good hockey player.
Really good hockey player. Potential number one center. Like, he's an incredible hockey player.
Right. Young. He's produced at this level. I'm not one of these people. I know there's some kind of like Dougie Hamilton as he leaves town. I think there was a little bit of kicking him in the keister on the way out. I don't buy that.
He's uppity.
He's uppity. That's right. He's uppity too.
Bad teammate.
Dumbest
stuff ever.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I was disappointed that it didn't work out for Calgary. That I say that without fully acknowledging what that might have meant.
Pretending there was no waiver situation, which it's funny because the people who are involved in that offer sheet and that contract still maintain
to this day,
vehemently maintain
to this day, they would have won
that it would have been fine. It was our Chris Johnston who had the huge scoop that
absolutely,
if they would have signed him, he would have had to clear waivers and fireable offense. Well, they still believe they had all their I's dotted and T's crossed.
Yep.
I always get that mixed up, but yeah, I mean, had that happened, it would have been disastrous. So let's just assume the waiver thing wasn't a part of the conversation. The actual theory of O'Reilly coming to the Flames on that contract was brilliant, and it would have been in. Now, that may have precluded them from eventually drafting Sam Bennett and Sean Monahan.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
But the actual theory at the time of adding a number one center in that manner,
loved
it. I thought it was a really good move by Dave Feaster.
A bold move, but his fingerprints are all over it. So there you go. Outside of that, Pat, just a quick look today. There's still some defensemen out there of interest. Johnny Oduya, Cody Franson.
Franson going to get paid here?
Is he holding people up for ransom?
I think he's...
Is he waiting for somebody to shed salary? Is there a team he wants to go to and they need to make something happen?
Potentially.
Because I heard that with Johnny Oduya. Did you read that?
No.
There's some thought that Johnny Oduya would like to go back to Chicago, but needs them to make a move.
So they got to trade Sharp or they've got to...
Right. We've said this every single day for all week long. David Schlemko's still out there. Wonder if he ends up back here. Boy, do you need a goalie? This isn't the marketplace for you.
If you're looking for some help in net, wait.
Here's the best I can come up with. Victor Faust, Jonas Gustafsson, and Ray Emery.
Yeah, there's not one guy I'd be like, yeah, please.
You need a centerman?
Not good.
Well, about four down is Olli Jokinen. Is that all you need to know?
They could still sign him here.
They could.
Yeah.
Pat, that is correct. You know we own a balloon?
I didn't.
You didn't know this?
No.
So I got up early. I had to play hockey this morning, and that's when balloons go up early.
Well, it's Stampede Parade Day, so they usually have a lot of the...
Do they?
Usually. They have like hot air balloons up for Stampede Parade Day.
So I'm driving, and I notice there's a couple of balloons, and one of them is Light or Kiss or whatever we have here.
Which one was it? Kiss?
Jack? No, both.
Okay, so it was
one side, it was Kiss. On the other side, it was Jack. So our two FMs have a balloon.
Now
I want to know why nobody told me we have a balloon.
I don't think you're necessarily familiar with hot air balloons.
What do you mean?
I
saw the logos on both sides. Clearly, we own a balloon.
So does that mean that we own every bus that has a Jack FM logo on it? And we own that bus.
I must be
able to drive it.
I got to be honest with you. I'll make a compromise. I'm good with the bus. Give me the bus.
You just want to broadcast.
I want to do a show from a balloon. And we own a balloon, Pat. We have a balloon. I'm assuming Mookie and Billy Joe and Matt and Eric.
They were the ones flying.
Oh, well. Can you imagine those clowns flying a balloon?
Were you ever familiar with the show? I know we got to get to break.
It's all good.
Ballooner Landing? Did you ever watch Ballooner Landing?
No.
People, the text line I bet will light up now, but people in Calgary know about Ballooner Landing, right?
Yeah.
Like,
do you know about the video game Lunar Landing?
No.
Well,
is that like an old school Atari game?
Yeah, it was a vector game.
Yeah.
It was a vector game, so just the white light, the white lines, it was a vector game. You had to land the lunar capsule on the moon.
Yeah.
So I know about Lunar Landing. I didn't know about Ballooner Landing.
It's a great show. Please, my texting friends, back me up on Ballooner Landing.
Oh, well.
If you were born in this city, you watched Ballooner Landing.
Okay. But we own a balloon.
I think we advertise on a hot air balloon. I think that's...
Let me ask you this. Riddle me this, Batman. Has this particular station, which is the biggest in this cluster, which is the most powerful radio station in this cluster, of which we know, nobody listens to anything other than this station half as much on those other... It's incredible. Have we ever been on anything? Have we been on a bus?
Been on a balloon? Boomer's eyes and Rhett's eyes are on the power ring at the
That's
Saddle
true. Gun. The morning show has been.
Eyes were up there for a while.
Were they?
It was creepy.
Okay. But have we ever been on the side of anything?
I don't think there's a lot of Sportsnet 960 buses. 660 News is all over the place.
Yeah. So they have they have buses, and they have a balloon. Nothing.
FM usually trumps AM.
It's an RV. That's all I'm saying. It's an RV. Coming up in the next hour, Arash Madani, our CFL insider, will join us. We're also going to Buffalo. Joe Yeardon, NHL.com, is going to join us. We'll talk to him about the Sabres. Look, beyond Ryan O'Reilly, the Sabres have been a story this summer. There's lots to talk about. Alex Pruitt from the Washington Post in the 4 o'clock hour, another team that's been hard at it here in the last couple of days, and Josh Humphries from the stand. Whoa, slow down there, cowboy.
Main event coming.
He's got the rodeo coverage that you've been dying for. He's going to join us at 5 o'clock. We'll hear from some of the winners day one of the greatest outdoor show on earth here on your home of the Calgary Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 The Fan, covering the world's fastest game. Home for the Calgary Flames and the National Hockey League.
The Big Show, brought to you by Comedy Cave. If it's comedy you crave, come to the Cave. Tickets are always $10. Comedy's so good, you'll whip out your funny bone. Go to comedycave.com.